Funding for Think is made possible by SMU's informal courses for adults.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. What does it take to make a champion? Or does a champion have to make him or herself? The stunning images in photographer Al Satterwhite's new book, Titans, Muhammad Ali and Arnold Schwarzenegger, seems to show us that while physical strength is a product of good health, good genes, and good training, athletic victory also requires mental and psychological strength. Al Satterwhite is here now to talk about the book, which comes more than 30 years after he took his first photographs of these world-famous Americans. Al, welcome to Think.
Thank you. My pleasure.
You started out, I understand, planning to make two separate books, one on Ali and one on Schwarzenegger. But somehow, you just kept finding the images going together.
Well, I had these images that I hadn't looked at in an awful long time, and I got them out and started thinking that there was some valid use of them. And again, I tried to lay them out in individual books, and for some reason, they didn't work. And then I started playing around with juxtaposing images of each, and that seemed to flow pretty good. So that's what I ended up doing.
Do you remember whether any of those similarities struck you at the time that you were taking these the first time around?
You mean when you're shooting?
Yeah.
No, when you're shooting, you're really tuned into what your subject's doing, because it's like an 8-hour day or longer mostly, and you're kind of like a fly on the wall. After a while, they forget you're around, and you just watch for those moments and try to be ready to shoot them when you see them.
Do you remember them being really conscious of you at first and then having that sort of melt away?
Well, they were pretty much used to photographers. I mean, they'd already had a lot of photographers around them, and after introductions, they didn't bother at all.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if that ability to be invisible so that you can get the shots you really need comes at the expense of you don't have much chance to really chat with them during this whole process, right?
You don't do much chatting at all.
Mm-hmm. What are you observing when you're not actually taking a picture? What are you looking for?
You mean on an assignment like this?
Yeah.
Well, you're looking for something that makes them human, for gestures, for the way they stand or how they carry themselves. Or particularly if they're a boxer, you know, how they're working in that sport and in bodybuilding, what they're doing in that. And I'm not a follower of either sport, so for me it's kind of new and alien.
There's a great picture in the book of Arnold Schwarzenegger talking on the phone to somebody, and he's sort of curled up in some ways, and I guess he was very young at the time, but he looks almost like a teenager talking to his girlfriend.
He might have been. Mm-hmm. I don't know. With Arnold, it was like I spent a week with him, and it was always at the gym working out, and then we would go to lunch, and sometimes we would go out, and he and a friend would go shooting skeet and trap, and other times I was over at his apartment, and he was just sort of doing chores. I mean, he went out shopping for plants one day and looking for antiques and just stuff, and then, you know, the phone would ring or he would call somebody, and I was just sort of invisible, which is really the way I like it.
Was there ever a point that you recall where he said, don't shoot this or lay off from it?
No, not really.
Mm-hmm. And what about Ali? There's so much sort of legend built up around him. What did you see in the time that you followed him? It was several separate occasions, right?
I shot Ali in 70 and in 71 when he was getting ready for both of his fights, the first one in Atlanta and the second one in New York.
And both of them seem, in some ways, a lot more introspective than I think a lot of people think that they might be.
Well, they're both very smart. Ali wasn't what you would call educated, but he was really street smart. There's a really interesting story. Another photographer friend of mine, Flip Schulke, had shot him at length before I got there, earlier, like in the 60s. And Ali, sensed right away, Flip was shooting him for Life magazine, and Ali understood publicity, and he said, well, he and Flip were talking early on, and Flip was into diving, skin diving. So Ali right away said, well, you know, I practice underwater. You know, it builds muscles. And right away, Flip ran with it. He called the editors. They gave him another day. He came out with his aqualung, and they got underwater, and they shot a really famous picture of Ali standing underwater in a pool boxing, you know, by himself. Well, I think it was like a year later, Flip was talking to his trainer, Angie, who laughed and said, He never practices underwater. He doesn't even swim. You know, it was simply a way to get another different kind of image that might get him on the cover. I mean, he was really good at that. But he was like, they were both like really, in my opinion, they were both like gentle people. They were easy to be around. They weren't threatening. And they were great for photography.
There's a great quote in the book from Ali who says, there are more pleasant things to do than to beat people up for a living.
Exactly.
Both of them at that time in their career certainly were known, particularly Ali. But how often were there sort of other people in the public wanting to get a glimpse of what was going on?
Well, with Ali, the gym was open and they had a little bleacher set up and people would come in, you know, boxing fans mostly, and there would be maybe 20, sometimes 30 people in there, fans just watching. There might be a TV crew in for an hour, half hour when I was there, maybe a still photographer, but not a lot. I mean, it wasn't really that big a deal back then. They didn't have handlers, and they just kind of came and went.
Another interesting shot is when you see Schwarzenegger at his sort of outdoor weight club where he belonged, and it was $12 a year to be a member of this club back then.
Muscle Beach.
Yeah.
It's still there, but I'm sure it costs a little more. And even there, they had a little bleacher set up. And, I mean, there were usually maybe two or three people just sitting there because they were resting and watching. And there would be one or two or three bodybuilders in the pen just sort of working out. I mean, it wasn't like when Arnold showed up, nobody paid any attention.
Were you aware at all that Schwarzenegger was using steroids?
No, not at all. I mean, I probably didn't even know what steroids were then.
I guess it wasn't something that people were really talking about at that time.
No.
Mm-hmm. My guest this hour is photographer Al Satterwhite. His new book of photography is called Titans, Muhammad Ali and Arnold Schwarzenegger. If you want to join the conversation, you can call 1-800-933-5372, or you can send an email to think@kera.org. What sort of research do you like to do, or if you do any, before you start a shooting assignment like the ones that are included in this book?
Well, nowadays it's easy because you can Google and you can go online. You can find a lot of information. In those days, it was basically you'd usually get some information from the editor or the people giving you the assignment. Like, you know, he's getting ready for a fight. We want this. We want that. And that was pretty much it. And I, like I said, I wasn't into boxing or bodybuilding. So for me, it was new and different. And I always liked that because it's a challenge. So you get to look for new stuff.
Does it take a while for you to get over, if there is any, the initial sort of reluctance to get really close to get the shots that you need? Or as a photographer, is it something you've never been shy about?
No, early on I learned, I work with wide-angle lenses a lot, and I mean, I'll pretty much be in somebody's face once they're used to me. Mm-hmm. I mean, you sort of work your way in the beginning. Some people are more used to you than others. It just depends on the situation.
And of course, now I guess if you shoot with digital, you know right away what you're getting. Whereas back then, you had to wait until the film had been processed. Right?
Well, yes and no. I mean, with digital, you shouldn't be looking at the back of the camera, which we call chimping. I mean, I'll do it sometimes, like just to check the lighting for the first shot or a sample shot. But after that, I don't worry about it. I don't look at the images till I get back to my studio and put them on the computer.
And there isn't any fear of running out of film or anything, right? As long as you have space,
That's the great thing. I mean, if you empty a card, you just quickly put another one in and away you go.
Were you particularly excited about either of these assignments, or was this sort of par for the course at that stage in your career?
I'm not sure exactly. I mean, there's always exciting interest because it's, like I said, something new and different. And I had heard of Ali, so I was like, oh boy, I get to shoot somebody who's a known quantity, so therefore he probably will be more interesting.
And did you go into work like this thinking, okay, there are several shots I have in my head, like it would be ideal if I could get sort of, you know, this angle of Ali with, you know, fist raised, or do you just assume that what happens?
Well, sometimes you have an idea or preconception of something that might make a good image, and then usually once you get there, you throw it away. Mm-hmm. You know, and you just forget about it. I mean, it's kind of like have a plan before you get there and then chuck it and go with whatever happens.
It's really remarkable looking through the book how much both of them, they look so young. We're used to them now at their current age and we've seen them over the years. Did it occur to you to try and make some newer images of them and sort of add those in, or did you want them at this specific period in time?
Well, it was really about this time, mm-hmm. and it would probably be too difficult to try to add images at this stage, but it would also, I think, upset the flow of the book.
Yeah. What did you, you said you hadn't looked at them for a long time. Do you go back on a regular basis and sort of look at work you've done in the past?
Well, I do now, mm-hmm. but I have time now. I mean, in the beginning, I mean, the first 15 years, I was a magazine photographer, so all you did was get off of one airplane, get on another. And most of my work was kept in New York at my agency. And then it was all returned in several large boxes in the 80s. And I sort of stuck it in a closet for a while. And again, I didn't have any time because I was into advertising. So you're shooting and planning and shooting and planning and traveling. And then when I finally had a chance, I would pull them out and start looking at the contact sheets and going, oh, wow, this is new. I haven't seen these, you know. And a lot of times, I mean, you shoot, like on Ali, I shot 50 rolls of film. And if they ran any, they probably ran one or two images. And that's it.
Was that upsetting to you at the time you were shooting it? Or did you think that was what you needed to have in order to guarantee that there was something that made the cover?
No, that's pretty standard. I mean, I would do cover assignments and we would shoot 20, 30, 40, 50 rolls of film, and you know they're only going to run one, and maybe they're not going to run any. So it's kind of like you shoot. Film is cheap, and now digital is even cheaper. It doesn't matter. You don't machine gun, but you shoot a lot of what you think might be interesting pictures. You're going to lose some because technically they won't be good. They'll be overexposed, or they'll be blurred, or the subject will move, or, you know, an eye slightly closed, and the third or fourth frame might be better.
How do you feel about when you're doing photojournalism work? Would you ever consider photoshopping something just to perfect it?
Well, we didn't have Photoshop then. And now it's the only thing I really do is take out something like a wire that might be obtrusive.
It's distracting from the image. Mm-hmm. You mentioned that everything was stored for a long time at your agency. How is it preserved? I mean, I wonder how well, you know, the contact sheets hold up after this amount of time.
Well, we don't really care about the contact sheets. All we care about are negatives.
Mm-hmm.
They were in a safe, air-conditioned place, so that was pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
There were a lot of, you don't realize how bad some labs are until you get your film back and start trying to scan them and, you know, retouch them.
So is that what you then took them in digitally so that you could really look at them close up?
Well, I looked through the contact sheets and picked out what I liked, and then I scanned in my scanner. I have my own scanner at home, 600 images. And then out of that, I sort of cut them down to about, I think there's about 180 images in the book. And then those had to be cleaned up, meaning they were scratches and dust marks that had to be taken care of.
And I noticed on the cover, you didn't put one or the other. Was that finally you just couldn't decide on a single image?
Well, I never wanted to have an image on the cover. I liked the simple title of Titans, but I couldn't come up with two images I thought would work side by side on a cover. They might work on opposite pages, but you know, a cover really needs to have something really strong on it, and I'm not a believer of multiple pictures on a cover.
Al Satterwhite is my guest. He's a photographer living now in Dallas. His new book of photography is called Titans, Muhammad Ali and Arnold Schwarzenegger. We'll take your calls after the break. You can get on the line right now at 1-800-933-5372, or you can send email to us at think@kera.org.
Funding for Think is made possible by SMU's continuing and professional education. You can enrich your life and your career with hundreds of non-credit courses. Details online at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is photographer Al Satterwhite. His most recent publication is a book called Titans, Muhammad Ali and Arnold Schwarzenegger. If you want to join the conversation, you can call 1-800-933-5372. When do you choose black and white and when do you choose color?
Well, in those days, most of the magazines were shooting black and white, and then there were some special color requirements, so we would shoot both a lot of times, which kind of got to, when you got to the crunch, it's like, oh, what do I take this one-time-only picture on, color or black and white? Now it's great, no problem. I mean, you shoot everything in color and digital, and you can make it black and white later.
Mm-hmm. And what do you like black and white for now? When do you choose it just for its own sake?
Well, black and white tends to be, in my opinion, a little starker and especially good with people. And you can get rid of annoying color distractions in the background. And I mean, I did nothing but color for like 20 years. I never shot any more black and white after I went into color and was kind of known for my color and design. But now I really like going back into black and white. So I kind of go back and forth between both worlds.
There was a time when you got really tired of still photography and you moved into cinematography. How do the two relate to each other?
Well, they're both pictures, and the only difference is movies, they move and they talk.
Is that really the only difference for you in terms of composition?
Yeah, pretty much.
The way you approach it?
Well, my composition is sort of intuitive. I mean, over all the years I spent looking through a viewfinder, I know what I like, and I just do it instantly. I don't have to think about it. With movies, the camera's moving and the subjects are moving and sound is being recorded. And once I kind of got past that, it's a no-brainer. It's just as easy. It's just longer and more time-consuming and usually has a lot more people around you and costs a lot more money.
Do you also see a relationship between commercial work and photojournalism work and the styles that you've developed for each one?
Well, in the beginning, it was all photojournalism. I don't do much of that anymore. I just shoot for myself, which is kind of in that style because I'm usually working by myself. In advertising, it got into totally being about translating a piece of paper, a layout, into a piece of film. And that was kind of creative in its own way, but not really.
Mm-hmm. What did it take for you to learn how to sell your favorite images to whatever, to the client, to sort of convince the client to take your advice as opposed to maybe picking what they wanted?
That's always hard. The best advice I learned, or the best thing I learned originally, was edit out anything you don't like, because if you don't, that's what you're going to see printed. So usually, like on a big ad edit, I would go through everything. I mean, and there might be like 300 rolls of film. I'd go through it and cut it down throughout all the garbage, and then I go back through it and start making piles of A and Bs, and then cut it down to a really small number of A's and hand those to the client. And if they didn't like them, then I'd say, well, then here are the B's, because everybody has a different idea of what they want.
Do you keep copies of everything you shoot somewhere?
Well, within reason. I mean, I keep all the originals. I keep all the negatives and all the chromes after I've edited them and thrown out the junk.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if going back to any of your work, not simply what appears in this book, you are often struck by how you've changed as an artist.
Actually, I'm kind of amazed that I was as good as I was in
the early
days.
Well, that's a comfort, isn't it? Yeah.
I mean, I look at some images and I haven't seen them in 30 or 40 years and I go, wow, that's really cool. Mm-hmm. And it's just, again, you weren't really thinking. You're just sort of shooting. I mean, you have to be willing to take chances. I mean, I've always, especially in the magazine world, if there's 30 photographers over there, I go somewhere else, you know, which means I might not get a shot, but I'm going to get something different. And it's like, or I might get the safety shot, you know, really quick and then get out of there and try to get something different.
You mentioned safety, and I know you mean it in a different context, but yours is not always a job that allows you to be in a safe and comfortable and clean space. You've been in a lot of sort of scrapes, haven't you?
Well, as a journalist or photojournalist, it seems like nobody likes you. They don't want you around, especially if there's bad things going on. I've always had problems in that area, but I've managed to you know, avoid them. In advertising, I got into shooting a lot of helicopters, which I really love, but they tend to fall out of the sky occasionally. And I've ridden two of those into the ground and walked away from them.
Wow.
So I'm a little hesitant to get on the third one.
So what? Yeah, third time's the charm for somebody. What are you thinking about as are you thinking to yourself, I ought to continue shooting this as this strange thing is happening, or is everything focused on, am I about to live or die?
Well, you really don't think that way. It's really all about the picture. I mean, there's so much adrenaline running if there's like a lot of action, you know, whether it's a sporting event or auto race or, you know, we used to shoot riots back in the 60s. I mean, one, you want to be protected and safe, so you're trying to take care of yourself that way. But on the other hand, you got to get some pictures. So you're looking for some way to come back with an image.
Sometimes photographers will talk about that strange, really not very accurate sense that when you're shooting something, you're invincible. Do you share that?
Well, I think in my 30s, I realized that in your 20s as a photographer, you tend to think you're bulletproof. You know, and you can really get hurt if you're not taking some sort of precautions or being aware. Mm-hmm. Like I said, in helicopters, I would fly, and after a flight, I would look down and I might have like hit my buckle, and I don't have my seatbelt attached. After I realized that, I started bringing my own safety rigs. You know, but I was lucky. You know, there are a lot of cases or a lot of times where I could have like been seriously injured.
What is your favorite sort of thing to shoot? If money were not an object and you were doing this just for your own entertainment?
Well, travel in new places and new people. I mean, it's really about people. I really like shooting people, and usually in a natural setting. I mean, not so much a portrait. But new and different is always exciting because you're in new surroundings and new smells and new colors, and it's just, you know, it's just wonderful. You just want to explore it.
When you go back and look through the images that you've created, do you sort of smell the smells and hear the sounds, and just do all the rest of the senses fill themselves in for you?
Yeah, pretty much. You can remember where you were at and what you were doing.
Does that happen for you when you look at someone else's really good photograph?
Not necessarily. I mean, sometimes you'll kind of have an idea of what they were probably going through to shoot it, maybe, but just like sometimes overhearing people talking about one of your photos, they're just don't know what they're talking about. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's almost laughable.
So that must be a strange experience if people don't really know that you're paying attention and they're making all sorts of pronouncements about what they're looking at.
It is. I mean, early on I had a Gower show in the 80s in New York, and I just happened to be cruising around listening to people, and they were just talking about, now the photographer was doing this and he was thinking that, and it was totally opposite of what was going on. I mean, and that's the thing about photography. They used to say that photographs don't lie. Well, they don't. It just depends on how you shoot them, how you frame them, how you crop them. You can make them say pretty much whatever you want them to say.
What makes a human being a particularly good photographic subject?
Animation, kind of being comfortable, you know, with a camera staring at you, even if it takes maybe an hour or two to get there, you know, then they sort of forget you. Character, like character actors you see in movies are much more interesting people to shoot because they have different faces. They have a different look. They're not the same as everybody else.
Is that maybe why, at least the first part of your statement, is that why celebrities are better to photograph? Because they're used to being around the camera and they don't have that hour of awkwardness?
Well, some are better than others, because some of them can turn it on and turn it off. And, you know, you really think you're trying to capture somebody's soul in a photograph. Well, you're really not. You're just trying to get a really interesting image of them. So I try to, if I'm doing a portrait, I try to engage them. You have to talk to them. But at the same time I'm talking to them, I'm trying to remember f-stops and focus and other things. And so a lot of times I'm just talking about gibberish or anything that comes into my head just to mm-hmm. kind of keep them unfocused on what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm. It almost sounds like working with children, that you have to just get them to not be thinking so much about the lens so that their mind is on something else. And then you get their face looking different somehow.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I used to do annual reports, and you would be photographing a CEO or somebody who basically sits behind a desk and he's used to ordering people around. And, you know, we try to set up, and we usually only get like, okay, you only have, you know, 20 minutes with Mr. Smith. So we would set up everything, set up our lighting and do our tests and Polaroids and whatnot and be ready for him. And I remember that what I learned early on was to try to get rid of all the handlers. They would be running around with him, and there might be like six of them. So I would basically sort of lock him out of the room because, like, well, you know, there's not enough room. We, you know, we can't have distractions. And I would literally lock the door. And in this one case, I was photographing a CEO, and we just sort of got into talking about cameras and, you know, who I photographed for. And I would just tell any outlandish story I could think of because he was becoming unaware of the camera. He was becoming motivated, and he was getting interesting. Because otherwise, he was just going to give me a sort of a forced smile and be done with it, and the justification or the cherry on the pie, so to speak, was like they used that photo for the next 3 years.
Wow!
Because he liked it, you know. And before that, they said he never likes his photos. Well, you know, he wasn't an easy guy to shoot.
It's got to be hard sometimes when people are so accustomed to posing for pictures, even the pictures that their families take. Everybody sort of has their face that they give for a photograph.
Yeah, you snap it and then, like, move on.
Yeah.
You know, and you try to get past that, like, you know, don't look at the camera or, you know, mm-hmm. or what's it like, or grab your kids or, you know, get them into anything you can possibly get them interested in.
And then for you, I wonder if when you know you have what you need, if you have to go through a process of just breaking off that engagement with that person because you then have to think about other things. In other words, once you've got what you've come for, are you pretty much done?
Well, usually they have to throw you out. I mean, there's always, you know, just one more. Mm-hmm. Because once you get them comfortable, then they start opening up and they might, you know, do something different. They might give you another view that nobody's gotten before. So you keep pushing. You know, and if they're really busy, they're, you know, business people, you've got a certain amount of time and you kind of have to let them go.
So do you have a camera that you take, you know, if you're skiing in Colorado, do you take snapshots of the family, or how do you handle sort of the family pictures that everybody takes? Do you use full gear and all that?
No, it's too much to carry around. I mean, now with digital, I have a so-called digital pocket camera I can keep with me, and it's got pretty good resolution. I can actually make pretty large images out of it.
Is it hard to separate those sorts of photographs from the ones that you take as your art and as your career?
No, not at all.
No?
No, there's fun pictures, and then there's, you know, work.
Mm-hmm. Where do you go for inspiration? Is it, do you look at the medium itself, or do you not limit yourself to cinematography and photography?
I like looking at movies. We watch a lot of those. I don't read too many magazines anymore. I just don't have the time. Basically, I observe. I've always observed. If I'm in a cafe, a restaurant, a bar, you know, an airport, anywhere, I mean, you're always watching people and you're watching a light. And then that's where you get your inspiration, really, from lighting. Because basically, if I am lighting, you know, I'm trying to reconstruct something that looks good.
In the Titans book, it's all natural lighting. Is that right?
Yeah, it's all available light.
On the one hand, that has to be really liberating, and on the other hand, there has to have to be times when you know that it's not going to be exactly what you need.
Yeah, and you have to work around it. If the lights are really, really bad, you sometimes try to get your subject to move into another area. Like, you know, could you do that over here? It would be a little better.
Mm-hmm. What's your favorite time of day for light?
Well, usually either very, very early in the morning or very late in the afternoon.
When the sun's sort of low in the sky.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It gets very directional, and with color, it gets very warm and friendly.
Mm-hmm. When you think about the future of photography, there's so much technology now, and sort of regular people can have cameras that just a few years ago would have been completely unavailable to them in terms of cost. Do you think that will have any impact on the ability of average people to take really good pictures, or is it still something that has to be studied and really practiced over a lifetime?
Well, it should be studied. I mean, now anybody can be a photographer, and a lot of people think they are. Just like with a word processor, you're a writer. Mm-hmm. But basically, they're not very good. I mean, they don't know how to edit, so if they show you images, they show you like 30 images of the same thing. The photography process is really learning what's good and being able to look at your work and edit it. And photographers are usually their own worst editor. You have to really work hard at, oh, I love this photo, but it's not good. So you throw it out. Mm-hmm. Or at least you put it in another pile and, you know, just pick out the one shot of, Aunt Martha that looks great and show that one.
Who was your best editor throughout your career?
Well, usually magazine editors that I didn't know who they were, mm-hmm. you know, until much later, if ever. It takes a while. I mean, now if I shoot stuff, if I can not look at it for 30 days or something like that and then go back to it, I can edit better. Because you don't remember so much the situation, the smells, you know, like, oh, this was the shot because I had to stand on my head and drink three glasses of water to get it. So you think that's a great shot. But when you look at it later, it's like, who are you kidding? Mm-hmm. You know, throw it out.
Yeah, I wonder sometimes if an intense experience for you as the photographer is not necessarily related at all to the quality of the images or to how evocative they are.
Well, you get attached to what you're shooting. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of times if you put a lot of effort into it, you think it should be a great shot. But like I say, if you look at it 6 months or 6 years later, it's like, what was I thinking?
The book you did, Titans, it's very large and the images are big. How large do you like to see a photograph that you're really proud of?
Well, if you're a photographer, you want to see them as big as possible. I mean, if I had my way, the book could be 16 by 20 and you wouldn't be able to lift it. But then you get into the real world of paper costs and publishers and whatnot.
But would you, if you were shooting in a gallery, if you were showing in a gallery, would you want a really large prints or would you want them sort of, you know, 11 by 14 or whatever?
It depends a lot on quality and the original images. Like these are black and white, Tri-X. A lot of the processing was forced. Mm-hmm. So 16 by 20 is probably a good size and then larger if necessary.
Al Satterwhite is here. He is a photographer living now in Dallas. His new book is called Titans, Muhammad Ali and Arnold Schwarzenegger. We'll take your calls and emails after the break. You can send them to think@kera.org or get on the telephone line at 1-800-933-5372.
Funding for Think is made possible by SMU's continuing and professional education. You can enrich your life and your career with hundreds of non-credit courses. Details online at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. Photographer Al Satterwhite is my guest. We're talking about his career in photography and about his new book. It's called Titans, Muhammad Ali and Arnold Schwarzenegger. If you want to join us, you can call 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. Kip writes to ask, what are your thoughts about the future of photography as a vocation? Is it more, less, or about the same level of difficulty today as when you started out, given that there's no more Life magazine, et cetera?
Well, from my point of view, I would say there's less opportunity, but that's because I'm older and started earlier. Probably there's lots of opportunity, maybe even more so. Life's not around, but if you go to a magazine stand, there are, it seems like, four times as many magazines. You know, they might pay less, but there's still a lot of, there's a lot of promise out there.
And his other question was about photographic associations. Do they help or hurt the market clients, you personally as a photographer?
What do you mean by?
He wrote ASMP.
Well, I'm a member of ASMP. I have been for like 30 years. Basically, like with the ASMP, they're trying to get good business practices and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And they're basically passing on information to photographers. They want to bring everybody up. And the other organizations, the MPPA and whoever, they're the same way. They want to educate their members. They want people to successfully make a living in their vocation.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's speak to Sina in Louisville. Hi, Sina.
Hello, thanks for taking my call, and
sure.
Thanks for your guests for coming in today. I'm a very amateur photographer, and I just bought myself a new camera. Me and my partner are turning our little room into a studio, and we're taking photos of the portrait. But we have a big problem with lights, and I just want your guest, please, to tell me briefly what light means, what on face, and what would you call a good portrait? What qualities does it supposed to have? I'll tag Emma and answer up here.
Thank you. That's probably a long question to answer, but maybe Al can give us some quick ideas about good lighting.
Well, good lighting, it used to be you had to study what they call Rembrandt lighting, which was hard lights and shadows. I basically probably don't light anything the same way twice. I just look, and again, it's kind of some observing people. And the fewer lights you use, the better. I mean, you can light somebody with one light and use reflectors or a white surface, or in the film world, we've actually backed up a white semi and used it as reflector fill. In a studio, you can set up a light and you can play with it, and you can get a subject in there and you fiddle around with them until you get something you like. And that's basically what lighting's all about. If you really want to learn lighting, go look at the masters, the old guys in the 40s and 50s and 60s in their books and how they lit. And if you see something you like, then try to emulate that.
Do you? It's surprising to me that you say you never light the same thing twice. I would imagine that a lot of photographers have the way that they do things. They know that if they set up the lights in just this way, that they'll at least get a successful shot.
Well, I've gone from, I mean, I've always shot a lot of different things. So we'll shoot cars, we'll shoot maybe something in tabletop, a glass with liquid in it, a portrait of a person, or it might be somebody in action, like an ice skater. So they're all different scenarios, and depending on where you're at and what you have to do is, you know, what you're going to use for lighting. I mean, I use strobe lights, I've used hot lights, I've used no lights. I mean, now I consider available light is whatever I have on the truck or whatever I have in the bag, you know, whatever you brought with you.
Do you have your own images up on your walls at home?
Oh, yes, I do. Mm-hmm. And a lot of other photographers' work, too.
The things that you have shot, do they strike you as memories, or are you able to separate yourself from that and just look at what appeals to you about the image itself?
I usually like it for the image, you know, the design, the color, or if it's a portrait, you know, the person and what they look like.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Al Satterwhite, the photographer, is my guest. Let's go next to Weatherford and speak with Christy. Hi, Christy.
Hi. My question is, why did you select Muhammad Ali and Arnold Schwarzenegger as the titan of your book? What is their connection?
Thanks for your call.
I get asked this a lot. In my opinion, they're the only two guys you could probably go anywhere in the world and people know who you're talking about.
And there are certain things in common. One is that you get the idea that neither one of them adored training for its own sake, which is pretty interesting.
Well, they both went beyond what they were doing. They never doubted that they were champions. They never doubted that they would succeed. And they had goals. And they, you know, met their goals and went beyond them.
You mentioned that they were relatively easy to work with because they had been accustomed to photographers before. Are there certain characteristics of people that make them incredibly hard to photograph? Are there people who, even if they're willing to have you there with them, that just make them really a pain?
Well, usually it's either a problem with their handlers nowadays who just want to make sure you get a good shot, and they don't understand that you have to shoot a lot of images to get a good shot, and that you and they have to trust you that you're going to throw out the bad stuff. And then the biggest problem is people that have a big ego of themselves, and they're not willing to sort of hand themselves over to you and let you do your thing. I mean, I'm trying to do the best I can. I don't want to make somebody look bad. I want to get the greatest image I can of them. So the celebrities I've shot in the past, whether they're in sports or film or whatever, the ones who really try to work with me, those are the ones that come up with the best images, because they're just there. You know, they're like, what can I do? You know, you want me to change shirts? You want me to sit in this room? I'm yours. Let's go.
Do you have a favorite image in the book? Can you describe it to us?
Not really. I mean, I like them all, and I've looked at them all for so long. I mean, one image I really like of Ali is it's a spread in the book. He's holding up an envelope that says The Secret of Muhammad Ali, mm-hmm. and it's written on a hotel stationery envelope. And basically, he just loved to twist the sports writer's knickers. And he held it up one day, scribbled it down, held it up, and walked around in front of him.
He's got a glint in his eye in the picture.
They're basically, well, what's your secret, Ollie? And it's like, there is no secret. I mean, he was just good at what he did, and he practiced it, and he had a certain braggadocio. That's the one. Mm-hmm. And he never doubted, and he was a loudmouth, and he knew it worked for him, and so he got good press, and that was one of the reasons he did.
Can you relate to that as sort of knowing that you're good at what you do and just applying that confidence?
Yeah, I think you have to realize that you're good at something. You know, I mean, I know I'm good at shooting photography, and if you leave me alone or help me out, I can come up with some great images. You know, if you get in my way, it just makes it a struggle. I have to work harder. But the difference between amateurs and pros, a pro has to come back with an image. You're on assignment. You've got to come back with something. An amateur is not gainfully employed. So they might go out on a Tuesday and it's like rainy. It's like, I don't feel like shooting. Go home. Come back next Tuesday and shoot an incredible shot. There are some amateurs who are better photographers than pros. It doesn't mean that they're any less. It just means they don't make a living at it.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Next on the line is Jared in Fort Worth. Hey, Jared.
Hi. I just had a quick question. I got into photojournalism a few years back and started freelancing. And I was just wondering if the photographer could share maybe some mistakes he's made along the way that maybe the rest of us could possibly avoid.
Thanks for your call.
I've made them all. The thing about photography is you can't, and probably a lot of other things, you can't move forward unless you make mistakes. You have to be willing to fail. The trick is, once you make a mistake, don't repeat it and learn something from it. And also try to make the mistake on a small assignment or a non-assignment. In other words, I started out working for a newspaper when I was in high school, and I was full-time in the summer, and we would do maybe 20 assignments a day. So if I blew one of them, it was no big deal. You know, they gave me 20 more the next day. When I started freelancing, you know, I pounded on Sports Illustrated's door for like 2 or 3 years until they gave me an assignment. That was not the assignment to blow, because I'd probably never get another shot at it. But, you know, when you start out small and you learn and you work and you shoot and you shoot and you shoot and you just keep moving forward.
Do you always throw a sort of risk-taking element into every assignment so that you get what you know you need, and then do you always try to push it a little beyond that?
Yeah, you always try to come up with something different. It's like, okay, I've got the Kodak moment here. Now, what can I do different? You know, would it be something like a different kind of lens, or would it be a different kind of composition or a different angle? I mean, you've always got to be trying to outthink it.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. We'll go next to Ray in Dallas. Hello, Ray.
Hi, I had a question for him as far as what was that pinnacle moment in your career or that pinnacle photograph that allowed you to or opened the door for you to take some of these extraordinary photos and be in front of such great people?
Thanks for your call.
Well, I don't think there are any real pinnacle moments. It's just a combination of everything you've done. I mean, I spent all my time in newspapers learning and trying to get better, and I wanted to work for magazines. When I got to magazines, it was just sort of, I mean, you always think, wow, when I get there, I'll have more time, more money, more everything. Well, usually you have less of everything, and you've really got to perform. So it's the learning in the first stage, you know, how you put it all together.
I think there are probably a lot of people out there doing other things that think to themselves, boy, if I could have a really cool job, I would love to be a photographer. And I wonder what sort of the rest of the world doesn't necessarily fully comprehend about what it takes to be a professional photographer.
Well, it is a really cool job. And mm-hmm. I mean, every now and then I have to pinch myself and go, wow, I've got to do exactly what I wanted my entire life. And luckily I discovered it early on. But it's not easy. And a lot of people, once they try it, they realize it's not for them. And the hours are long. I mean, sometimes early on, you might be standing in the rain all day waiting for a shot or an angle or shooting. There's no fun in shooting a football game when it's like 32 degrees and raining, snowing, or sleeting. But it's part of the job. And then you might have to edit all night, or you might have to fly all night, or you might be stuck in an airport all night. I mean, it's just slog, slog, slog. There's a lot of that downtime and do I really want to do this? And that's what you go through. It's just a lot of hard work. But, you know, you can have hard work at something you like or hard work at something you don't like.
We have time for one more quick phone call, and that comes from Spence in Rockwall. Hey, Spence. Hi, Spence.
Hello?
Hi.
Hi, Chris. I was just, Schwarzenegger was a big hero of mine back in the mid-70s. He's actually who got me interested in bodybuilding. I've since no longer work out because of injuries. But could your guest, could he see back at that time the drive that he had of later aspirations of getting to acting and then, of course, politics? Was there any evidence of that back then when he was around him?
Thanks for your call.
No, there's no idea that he was going to do what he's done now, but there was, again, that thing that Arnold was, right away you got the impression he was really, really smart and driven, and he was only going to go up, whether it was just in bodybuilding or whatever, but he was one of those people that you meet who's got a totally positive, open attitude, and he was very friendly. He was like, what do you do? You know, he would ask you questions. It's not about me, it's about you too. And, you know, you can really relate to somebody like that, and you really understand that they're, I mean, like I said, I knew nothing about bodybuilders other than originally you think, well, they're guys with big muscles and, you know, they don't really, they're not very smart. But when you meet somebody like Arnold, it's like, whoa, totally different.
It's funny, though, even that idea of him saying, what do you do, and engaging the other person, it's very political.
It is. I mean, we would go to lunch afterwards and eat and talk, and I have no idea what we talked about. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we must have been doing something interesting because it wasn't boring.
Do you ever look at photographs that someone else has taken and think either, I really wish I had taken that, or do you think to yourself, if I had done it, it would be this much different and this much better?
Well, there's both. I mean, I look at a lot of photos, and I just love them. In fact, that's why I have some of them on my wall. But photographers are kind of like, I could do that better. Mm-hmm. I mean, you always look at another photographer's work and say, I could light it better, shoot it better. But, of course, you don't know what was involved. I mean, the guy might have had like a half a second, and that was his only shot. Mm-hmm. And you weren't in that situation.
So when someone owns one of your photographs, do you ever feel compelled to tell them what it took to get?
Well, not unless they ask. I mean, a lot of people are interested in stories. So if they're at the gallery and I'm there, I mean, I'm happy to tell them stories.
Great. Al Satterwhite, thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Al Satterwhite's new book is called Titans, Muhammad Ali and Arnold Schwarzenegger. Thank you very much for listening to Think. My name is Chris Boyd. Have a great day.
Think is produced by Jeff Whittington and engineered by Jeannie Mascoro. Learn about upcoming programs, subscribe to our free daily podcast, and order CD copies of your favorite Think shows on the radio page of KERA.org. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@KERA.org.